This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Pastoral Medicine. This is Lecture 8. Dear friends, yesterday we examined the human constitution as far as it can be seen in man himself or in connection with his immediate environment. Today we must go out beyond man, for everywhere man stands in some relation to the forces in the universe. And one can only understand these various relations if one explores the immense diversity of the universe itself. Just think, dear friends, how manifold the forces in the universe are. Look at a growing plant, for instance. Follow the growth of its stem upward from the earth's surface, and the growth of its root downward. Right there are two opposite tendencies within the plant, a striving upward and a striving downward. And if today we were far enough along in scientific research, so often used for less important matters, to use it for such a thing as the growth of a stem upward and the growth of a root downward, we would find the connections in the universe that would then finally explain the totality, man and the world, microcosm and macrocosm. For we would find that everything connected with the stem's upward growth has some relation to the unfolding of the sun's forces in the course of the day, in the course of the year, even beyond the year. And we would find that everything connected with the root's downward growth has some relation to the moon's forces and the moon changes. If therefore we look at a plant properly, we come already, through its form, to a relation between sun and moon. We have, so to say, to extract the simple image of a plant from the whole universe, from all the forces in the universe. Someone who is really observant will never see the root otherwise than striving downward into the earth and at the same time rounding itself. The root rounding itself into the earth. That is the picture of the root that one must have, the rounding form pushing into the ground. Plate 5, left. The stem we must see differently, as it unfolds in an upward direction. Someone who combines sensitivity with observation will have the definite feeling that the stem strives to stream out as a line. The root wants to unfold in a rounding, circular direction, the stem wants to unfold in a linear direction. That is the archetypal form of the plant. And in the linear, striving upward, we must see the presence of sun forces on the earth. In the roots striving toward roundness, we must see the presence of moon forces on the earth. Now let us look further. We think of the sun as being at a great height, and of the plant as streaming to reach it. But the plant does more than just reach upward. It reaches out in width, it creates peripheries. And we find within its upward striving that something else is active, at first just at its top in the blossoms. We find the forces of Venus working with the sun forces. Then, as blossoms unfold below, as leaves come, moving inward from the periphery, we find the forces of Mercury working. So, if we want to understand the structure of the plant as it pushes toward the sun, we must see that the sun forces are helped by the forces of Venus and Mercury. That on the one hand. On the other hand, we must realize that these forces alone would not be able to form the plant. With them alone, the plant being would, in a certain sense, only attain a compact, solid form. For it to unfold as one sees it, for instance, in the most extreme example, in a tree, there are forces working everywhere, counter to the Venus and Mercury forces, namely the forces of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. Thus, as well as the basic polarity of sun activity and moon activity, there is also the activity of all the other planets in the universe. Plate 5, left. Let me add this comment. In the plant, dear friends, you have the entire planetary system in front of you. It is right there on the earth. And perhaps it is not so ridiculous that a scholar, a half or three-quarters scholar, as Paracelsus was, made such a statement as this. When you eat a plant, you're eating the entire planetary system. For all those forces are contained in it. Paracelsus said it like this. With the plant, you eat the whole heaven. The world is indeed formed in such manifold variety, but one does have in one's immediate environment the forces of the entire macrocosm, in growth, in structure, in the disposition of all living things. Now let us get back to the human being. We showed yesterday that one can go from the area of our lung breathing to a higher area, where, if I may so express it, there is a finer inhalation. And we discovered that this finer inhalation carries karmic streams in from the past. We can go still further. If we have, working into man, what I would like for the moment to call a refined breath stream, plate 5, right, then we can say the following. If the human being would unfold only what lies in his astral body and ego, he would never reach the sun, with the human constitution as it is at the present time. When he is in his ego and astral body, during sleep, he does not reach the sun's sphere. There is only darkness. If he were to live in his astral body and ego, without any connection to his etheric and physical bodies, he would not come to the sun. How then does it come about? Let us consider first what the situation is when the astral body and ego approach the etheric body. In clairvoyance, one can bring this condition about fairly easily by strengthening one's thinking, strengthening it by very thorough, energetic meditation. Then it is easy to come to this condition. It is the beginning of initiation. One slips down into one's etheric body, but is not yet able to take hold of the physical body. One remains in the etheric body. In this condition, it is possible to think very, very well. One sees nothing, hears nothing, but one can think very well. Thinking is not in the least extinguished. Seeing, hearing, and the other sense activities are suppressed. At first, the thinking remains the same, except that one can think more than previously. One can think such thoughts as we are expressing here, for instance, thoughts about the macrocosm. The thinking becomes wider. One knows clearly, now I am in the etheric world. Thus, when one is in one's etheric body, one is truly in the world ether. One has the clear experience, I am in the spiritual world out of which the sense world comes. But one is not able to differentiate between spiritual world and sense world. One is beyond a differentiated sense world. The sun no longer shines, the stars no longer shine, there is no moonlight. There is no longer a clear distinction between the kingdoms of nature on the earth. A person only has that faculty when he is down in his physical body in normal life or in a higher stage of initiation. But in exchange for the blurring of the contours of the sense world, there is a general spirituality, the weaving life of the spirit. If now one goes further, if one takes hold consciously of one's physical body, so that one begins to live in the organs, then the perceptions that had become dim or had vanished begin to emerge again, with the exception of earthly forms. Now they appear as spirit entities. Where earlier in ordinary consciousness one had seen the sun, and then it had become dark, foggy, but had still been within the general weaving spirituality, Now there appear beings of the second hierarchy. Now one can differentiate in the spiritual world. Moon and stars appear again, but in their spiritual aspect. They are now spiritual colonies. They can be called that, or the like. Now one understands how it is that in ordinary, everyday consciousness, mankind sees the sun, for instance, in its physical form. And the same with other things. But when someone has entered consciously into his physical body, has actually taken hold of it in its spiritual dimension, he sees the sun as a spiritual being, and the same with the whole world. Now one knows that with each sun ray shining down upon us during the day, with every single sun ray, spirit is also entering us. Through every sense experience, spirit is entering us. We have, therefore, to regard the higher, finer breathing as a breathing that is continuously impregnated by spirit. And we perceive that sun is living in every sense perception that streams into us. It is indeed the spirit of the sun, or the spirits of the sun. Sun is present in every sense perception. In our finer breathing, the sun force, the sun life, is streaming straight into us. So you see the relation man has to the sun. When a ray of light streams into your eye, EYE, the sun spirit is streaming in with that ray of light. The spirit of the sun is the substance of the finer breathing. With our sense perceptions, we breathe in the manifold ingredients of the spiritual sun. You have there an important view of the human being from one direction. As he unfolds in his etheric body, plate 5, yellow, he develops in his etheric body the thinking, the thoughts of the universe. These thoughts of the universe in which a person finds himself when he is living consciously in his etheric body are at first devoid of warmth or cold, devoid of tone. They are a kind of vague feeling in which one's feeling of self merges with one's feeling of the macrocosm. But if now one takes hold of the physical body, one enters into the spirit of the sense perceptions, and the thoughts are tinged from various sides. Through the eyes, the sun essence, thought, that is breathed in, is tinged with color. Through the ear, thought is tinged with tone. Through the organ of warmth, thought is tinged with warmth or cold. There you have the cosmic relation of thought to sense perception. Thought must be understood as preceding the sense experience. Then the sense experience comes through infusion, tinging by the sun. Mankind simply does not realize that the sun being streams into us with every sense perception. And on the path of the sun, past karma streams in too. It is by no means a childish image to think of the sun as a receptacle of past karma. If we understand the human head properly, we must say, the spiritual sun rays stream in invisibly and are transformed as they stream in into something physical, which then appears as merely a physical attribute in the world of color, tone, warmth. And at the same time, on the path of these sun rays, which slip in through the senses into the nerves, karma enters into man. That is one side of the human being. Now let us look at the other side, at what we were studying yesterday. Karma goes out at that place in the organism where the lymph is, the place where everything is alive and active, that has not yet been drawn into the blood. There we find the outgoing karma. What are the paths of the outgoing karma? To know that, one must acquaint oneself through spiritual science with the moon forces. And now, if one gradually comes from the etheric world to which one has become accustomed, and takes hold of the physical body in its periphery, the area of the senses, then all the life streaming in from the sun and bringing with it one's past karma appears to be bringing reproach and much to disturb one. But far more important than the disturbing elements in one's karma is this knowledge, this insight that one can attain. It is nevertheless by virtue of your past that you have become what you now are. The life of one's inner being is enriched by the perception of the sun entering on the paths of the senses and nerves. If someone can separate himself from his karma and concentrate on the in-streaming forces of the spiritual sun, he will experience an infinite happiness as he receives them. He will wish that the sun element were in him perpetually. He cannot help but long for it. The sun element enters into us lovingly if we wish it. It is what we know in physical life, in a weaker form, as our active human love. This is the interplay of sun activity with the human inner world, the loving penetration of the sun into man and into everything that wants to sprout and grow and thrive in man. The living sun rays enter lovingly. Here love is not merely a soul spiritual force. Here it is the force that calls everything physical to germinate and sprout and grow, everything that can be beneficial to man in every way when he values it. This is the force of which a human being is aware through direct outer vision. But now, if one takes hold of the physical body in the other direction, in the direction of the forces that develop the lymph, and prepare it for entering into the blood, if one investigates in this direction, one becomes aware of the activity of the moon. And this is of quite a different character. We can say on one side, the spiritual sun is active in the way we have indicated. On the other side, the moon is active. When we work to grasp inwardly the process of the lymph-blood formation, we find we are entering into the activity of the moon, and we have the constant feeling that the moon wants to take something away from us, to lift something out of us. With the sun, we have the feeling that it wants continually to give us something. With the moon, we have the feeling that it wants continually to take something out of us. And if we are not alert while we are observing the moon activity, when we have consciously taken hold of the physical body and are engrossed in the lymph-blood formation, if we are not absolutely alert and in complete control of our vision, suddenly the continuity is broken, and standing there before us is a spiritual being similar to ourselves but distorted, almost a caricature of ourselves, a being we have brought to birth. We would miss this emanation if we were not alert. But it does not seem particularly strange to us as it separates from us and confronts us. It is hardly more than an enhanced view of ourselves in a mirror. When we look at ourselves in an ordinary looking glass, that is the physical world. When we see ourselves reflected in the etheric world by the moon forces, that is a higher kind of mirroring. Let us review the whole process. There is nothing particularly amazing about it, but it shows us that we are indeed connected with the universe, that the moon is continually separating forces from us, which then it makes independent, forces which are living in us, and which then go out into the spiritual world, streaming out into the macrocosm, constantly carrying images out of us into the macrocosm. But now, dear friends, think how it could be if such an image, which the moon forces are continually producing in man, and which then they want to take out of him to carry into the distances of the world, if such an image were held back in the human body and kept there. And not merely an image, an abstraction, but a form permeated by forces. Indeed, how could such a form be held back in the human being? We have the moon forces wanting continually to be pulling, drawing the human image out. How then could this form be held back? It can remain in man if, from another side, the sun forces are brought in deeply enough. Then the form remains in the human being. Then begins an embryonic life. Fructification consists of nothing else than that the sun forces are drawn down to where the moon forces are active in the lymph. Thereby the image, which would otherwise go out, takes hold of physical matter in the human body. What otherwise is a mere image now takes on physical form. For this to happen, sun forces combine with moon forces in the lymph system of the human organism. Plate 5. Let us look at the other side. We can also investigate the moon forces higher up. Then we find that the opposite happens. Then man is not formed again in man, but the sun macrocosm is given form in man. Now we have a different view of the macrocosm. When the embryo is formed, a physical world arises within the human being that must come out. When, on the other hand, the moon forces activate their desire nature, they want to capture and draw down the sun forces, then the spirit in the universe comes into being within man. The spirit of the universe is engendered, a spiritual embryo. Then the possibility is given for forming what must come in from the spiritual world, what has been in the spiritual world up to the time of a new earth life, and now comes in as a spirit embryo. Then takes place in the human being the union of the two. If one explores these things, one comes to see that they are completely interwoven. Then one has the true explanation of man's relation to the universe. Now help comes from every direction. The sun activity that is uniting here with the moon activity has the help of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. What then are the tasks of Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn? Recall, dear friends, what I said yesterday. When the sun forces are going in, first, they must stop for the light. Secondly, they must stop for the macrocosmic chemism. Thirdly, they must stop for the life. The Saturn forces bring about the stop for the light. The Jupiter forces, in their wisdom, bring about the stop for the world chemism. The Mars forces, the stop for the life. There you have in detail the drawing in of the sun forces modified by the forces of the so-called outer planets. From the opposite direction, you have the moon forces modified. When they work alone in their full strength, they bring about the formation of the embryo, that is, the physical formation. When they are less strong, they do not enter into physical matter, but stay in the direction of the spirit, combining with the Venus forces of soul love. They can be still weaker when they unite with what comes from the other side, the forces of Mercury, the divine messenger, who in ordinary, everyday earth life leads the lower forces up to the higher. Look for a moment at the two diagrams, right and left, plate 5. If we look out at the plant world, spread around us, we find everywhere sun, moon, and stars. If we look within the human being, sun, moon, and stars are there, too, in exact correspondence. When something within is not in order, that means there is some trouble or other in the inner collaboration of sun, moon, and stars. If we, as therapists, want to restore it to order, we must search in outer nature for a corresponding Saturn activity, for instance, that will work therapeutically on an unhealthy moon activity, and so forth. It is all out there. You see, people will begin to have confidence in medicine again when they see that in his inner constitution the human being comprises the whole world. This is the knowledge we would like to bring to medicine again, knowledge it once had. The world will only have its trust in medicine restored when these things are once again understood. But now let us look at the other side. Look first at the activity in man that is moon activity. See how it is striving continually to draw the human element out of man, to carry it into the universe. Let the picture stand before us. The human being striving to get out of himself, wanting to be carried into the universe. This must not be presented to humanity as an abstraction, this shattering secret, but in picture form. The moon working continually to lift the human being out of himself, to show him his relation to the macrocosm. He comes into earth life in the form of an embryo within another human being. But when this moon activity is enhanced by Venus and Mercury activity, then he is born not physically but spiritually. If we add to the physical birth what we can invoke of Mercury and Venus activity, we bring about a spiritual birth. The human being is then born spiritually, outside man, in the universe. We baptize the human being. The working of the physical sun is always present in man. We can add to that perception a consciousness that the spiritual sun also is active in him, that on the paths of the physical etheric sunlight, the light rays, chemical rays, life rays, the spirit is also pouring in. Spirit enters man by way of the same paths that the physical etheric sun activity enters, namely, through the senses. In the same way that a human being perceives in everyday physical life the physical etheric activity of the sun, we enable him to perceive the soul spiritual activity of the sun. We give him communion. Going out from the communion, we find on the one hand what is related to the help the sun is given, the darkening that relates to the light, the constant nearness of death to life. We go to the outer planets that are connected with the sun, and we add to the communion at the proper moment the anointing. Or we go into the human being, and before he has any thought of the macrocosm, we hold him fast in his inner life, wanting not merely to give him his place as human being in the macrocosm, but wanting to plant the macrocosm in him in picture form, so that it becomes a seed developing in him. We give him confirmation. If an individual receiving the sacraments lives in them with full consciousness, he will be continually healed by them, healed of the universal illness to which he succumbs, or is in constant danger of succumbing in status nascendi, simply by reason of his having incarnated in the physical material world. This is the priest's task. It can also happen that an individual is by nature continually in the status nascendi of wanting to be free in the spiritual world, wanting to get out of the physical world, yet he is obliged to remain in it during earth life. And this causes in his organism not a state of unspirituality, but a state of super-spirituality, that is, illness. Medical measures must be prescribed, the opposite pole to the sacraments when illness appears. This is the physician's task. Thus we see on the one side the spiritual healing of the priest, and on the other side the priestly attitude of the physician, the physical healer. If we recognize how their tasks can be coordinated, then we have grasped the significant connection between pastoral work and medical work. Then pastoral medicine is not just a theory, but embraces the working together of human beings. The end of Lecture 8.